You're on a new path and one you didn't expect to travel. And it's definitely a road less traveled. It's the one without kids. My name is Sherry Johnson and I'm on it too. No matter how you got here, through pregnancy loss, infertility, maybe just never finding the right partner, the loneliness and the lack is the same. The triggers, they're universal. That feeling of inadequacy in a world so focused on motherhood is what we all feel. And it all boils down to our sense of worth. This is where we walk the path together and we talk about building our sense of self-worth so we too can find our place and live joyful, fulfilling lives as childless women. Welcome to the Awakening Worth Podcast. Hello, we are on episode number 63 on the Awakening Worth podcast. I'm your host, Sherry Johnson, and today I have Lana Menikowski of Stitch Coaching with me. Lana and I met on Instagram, which I think is so amazing. When I started my fertility journey, it was 2012, and Instagram was definitely not what it is today. I don't even know if it was around in 2012, maybe in its infancy. Anyway, it was really lovely to meet her and to get to talk to her live on the podcast today. So Lana had her own journey through 7 years of fertility treatments and a lifetime of dreaming of motherhood. When she couldn't find the community that she was looking for, she created Stitch Coaching and the So Now What podcast. She's a certified coach and she helps childless women rediscover their meaning and build a future that they truly love, which I love that she does that because I think it's entirely possible. She and I are living proof. We went deep in this conversation about the infertility journey, the stress of all the treatments. We talked about grief, all the grief along the way, and how to heal, how to find hope, how to grow through this. Lana has a really great form of coaching, which you're going to get a taste of when I actually put myself in the hot seat about something that had really been bugging me as a childless woman. And Lana helped me see it a different way. So stay tuned for that. Let's jump in. Lana, thank you so much for joining me. I have been watching your work for a while and I really admire what you're doing. So I'm really thrilled to have you on the podcast. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, I'm grateful that you'd consider me as a guest on your beautiful podcast. So thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. I think we're kindred spirits, as I was saying before. We have a lot in common and we're both kind of trying to teach and educate and serve the childless community, particularly I think those that came to it on the infertility path. Am I right?
Yes. I think a lot of us in the infertility community have had so much hope and are dealing with how to release that hope and change our lives into something that we find meaningful.
Definitely. Yeah. So on that note, why don't we start with a little bit about your background and your story? We sure?
Absolutely. So I started to seek treatment for infertility. I was 37. So going into it, I already had a lot of statistics and odds that were not in my favor. But having a child and being a mom was something that I always dreamed of. And my husband really desired to be a father. And we decided we would just go through and see what we had available to us as far as treatment goes. So we spent the first probably year and a half doing the workup and IUIs and, you know, all the things that come through with the diagnosis. And we did 7 IUIs, none of which were successful, and then decided from there to move forward with IVF. And we did our first round of IVF. We did 2 cycles here in Chicago, of which were successful. And then I took a break, to be honest with you. I wasn't sure that I could go through it again. I had a lot of despair. I had a lot of question of myself, a lot of feeling that I was a failure as a woman because my body didn't do what I imagined it was supposed to do as a female. And I just didn't know that I was up for more of it, because at this point I was already in my 40s. And as you know, once you hit another decade, those statistics start to diminish even more. So it was actually a friend of mine who had sought treatment outside of Chicago. She went to a clinic in Colorado, and she was actively pursuing IVF. She had one child that she had naturally on her own, and then was having trouble getting pregnant again. And she was really enjoying her experience. She felt like the treatment she got was great at this clinic in Colorado. And so then that's when I signed up to move my treatment to this clinic, and we did it all over again. So I had signed up originally, they had a package of three. I made it through two, and then considering the results weren't as optimal as we had hoped they were, our doctor was very honest with us, which I'm super appreciative of, and just said, you know, I would not recommend you move on for your third treatment. And so that's where our journey ended. I had one frozen embryo, and we thawed that, and it turned out that it was chromosomally abnormal. It had trisomy 16. And that was kind of the last conversation I had with the clinic. There was, you know, obviously the adoption offer, the donor offer, so surrogate wasn't really an option for us. And after that, that was it. So I was just left kind of figuring out what I was going to do if I wasn't going to be a mom.
Yeah. I feel so much of the pain in that journey. I went through so much of that myself. I didn't even get to IVF, but I can't even imagine the amount of stress that it takes to go through even IUI, visiting the clinics, having your blood work done, ultrasounds, all this stuff. And then going through IVF in Chicago and then doing cycles like miles away from your home is a whole, like that just adds a whole nother element.
Yeah, it was definitely a juggling act. And the first rounds I went through in Chicago, I didn't really tell anyone, especially at work. I had a lot of shame around it. So I would find myself like going to these appointments in the morning, doing my workup. The doors would open for your blood work. They would open at 6 and there would be a line out the door for women that were trying to fit all this in before they started their quote unquote day off. And I just remember then showing up to work and already feeling I had been through so much emotion and so much stress and anxiety. And then I put that extra pressure on myself of showing up to work and acting like, you know, I just rolled out of bed, had my coffee and a shower and, you know, starting out my day at 9 a.m. So yes. And then moving to Colorado, it was almost more of a relief, if you will, because when you're going through your treatments in Colorado, I had to go out there for 10 days. So there was, I purposely took time off work, and at that point was more comfortable with sharing with my employer what I was going through. But going there for 10 days and not having that stress of work as well was helpful to me. And I was able to be a little bit more relaxed because I would go to the actual clinic every day for my monitoring. And that was all I really had to do all day. So in Colorado was beautiful. You know, I live in the Midwest where it's super flat, and being out by the mountains, and there was very much a zen for me leaving my environment and going there.
I could imagine that, like not having the pressure of going to work and, like you said, putting the mask on and acting as though everything is okay. Like that is a ton of pressure by itself, let alone the 4 hours that you spent running around before you even start your day. Right.
It's very much a, I think for me, sitting where I am now and having the desire to learn more about myself and see that how I was really trying to cover up so much just made me more exhausted, because I wasn't allowing myself to just be who I was. I had created this story in my mind that infertility was shameful, that needing help to get pregnant meant something was wrong with me. And I was just at a place that made me feel really uncomfortable about myself. And it was exhausting.
Yeah. Do you think that other, like that most women going through the fertility journey recognize how stressful it is? Quick interruption here to talk about creating your best year. We are just over 6 weeks into 2024, and if you haven't seen any improvement towards getting to your best year ever, even without kids, then you need to download my free guide on how to create it. You will discover what might be standing in the way of your best life. I've got 3 mistakes in there that you might be making that are keeping you stuck in grief, and how you can really tap into what you truly desire in your life. You can get that free guide by going to sherryjohnson.ca/bestyear. I will link that up in the bottom of the show notes so you don't have to worry about the spelling, but it's sherryjohnson.ca/bestyear. It's a free guide. It's going to help you to create your best 2024, a year full of purpose and meaning and joy. So go grab that now. And let's get back to the episode now.
In hindsight, I think we see it as very stressful. And yes, I think it is a very stressful thing to go through. And I think what we are shorting ourselves from as women is feeling a sense of pride for how we are able to manage all those things and show up every day after, you know, having gone through a couple hours of monitoring and driving to your clinic and doing all that and showing up for your day. So it's extremely stressful. And I think on top of that, we also don't give ourselves credit for how amazing we are that we could actually do all that in a 24-hour span.
Yeah. Instead, we're beating ourselves up about how broken our bodies are and how, you know, we're not good enough. Our bodies aren't good enough, you know, compared to anybody who can just conceive easily and naturally.
Yes.
For me, I feel like it was more in hindsight that I recognized how stressful that period of my life was. When I was in it, I was just so focused on the outcome that I was just going and not even stopping to think how I was feeling and how much pressure I was putting on myself. It was in hindsight that I realized it. Do you agree? Did you know it when you were going through it?
Well, I knew it was stressful, but I would say for me, I think I was doing a lot of comparison of my outcomes versus others. So being in the older age bracket, the friends that I had that were getting pregnant or trying to get pregnant, there was a handful of them that were going through IVF. And I felt grateful to have that community of women to talk to, but one by one, as they were all continuing to get pregnant and have kids, I just kept comparing myself and my inability to have a child or the not responding to a round or having a round canceled. I would put a lot of pressure on myself by comparing myself to the success of others that were going through IVF. So although I was grateful to have a community in the beginning that I could talk to who've gone through it and they sort of help you understand what it's like and the medications and, you know, how to navigate basically the process, it was a hard thing for me to move forward and always be the one who wasn't responding to things as I saw others grow and have success.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely common, but yeah, I don't think it's that common for women to have I don't feel it is. It wasn't for me. I didn't have a group of women who were going through it at the same time. And for me, it was 2014, 2015, and then into 2016, 2017. Instagram was not what it is now. There was not a big community of women who were talking about infertility online at the time. So I didn't really have people to talk to about it, but I still felt, and you probably felt like this too, like that feeling of, in the beginning, it's nice to have people to go through it with, but then as soon as they start getting pregnant, then you start to feel left behind. And I felt that way even just with my friends who were all, there were a couple of them who were still having kids when I was, but most of them had already had their kids. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the last one. I'm not going to, you know, our kids aren't going to be able to play together because mine are going to be so much younger. And I had all these things going on in my head that were exactly what you said, all about comparison.
And it was hard because I also felt, and again, no one ever told me this. It was just what I believed about myself, is that a lot of people felt sorry for me and my friends that were having kids or were getting pregnant or whatever the case was. I felt like there was this rift between us because they were feeling sorry for me. So they didn't want to share with me. Maybe they didn't want to be excited around me. And I see now that that was just something that a belief that I had in my mind that I was just creating, because I had such awesome friends who did get pregnant successfully through IVF, who have had kids, and they love me so much, and have, especially now creating Stitch Coaching and becoming a certified life coach, are some of my biggest champions. And so I think we really, at least for me, I isolated myself because it was this little safe place that I could just create a cocoon around myself, because I was judging myself so much that I felt like others were feeling sorry for me and pity for me. And I just felt so uncomfortable by that.
Yeah. You know, well, and prove me wrong, but I do feel, maybe this is my own belief, but I do feel that there are women out there who do pity the childless women or do feel sorry for them. I'm not totally sure what the difference is, if they're the same thing. I feel like that's a slightly different emotion, but I think we make it up. Like, I don't know that our friends do, because they know us so well, and you're right. Like, my friends were my champions. They were, even though they didn't know what I was going through, I had a few that were just, they were always asking, they were checking in with me. They were, you know, even now they're supporting me in different ways through social media. But I do think there is out in society a general feeling of pity for childless women who did not make that choice to be childless. Do you think that's wrong?
I know. I think you're spot on with that. And now that I have the training and I've done the work on myself, my first question is, why are you making that a problem in your life? Like, as the woman who's childless or child free, why is it a problem that you don't have a child? Why is it a problem that somebody feels sorry for you? Mm-hmm. And that's where the work comes in, because Betty Sue is able to feel whatever she wants for you, but what you're making that mean about her words or her actions towards you is really where I have found the ability to transform my life and my mindset around being childless.
Yes, that is so true. Yeah. As soon as you shift, like, who cares what they think, right? It doesn't have to affect you.
And I think also a lot of us, we just assumed we would be moms. We just assumed that that would be the golden ticket to a happy future. And we never stopped to question, is that really what you wanted? And why is having a child the golden ticket? Yeah. And I'm not saying that I'm glad I couldn't have a child. Like, I still, there's not a day that goes by that I don't wonder what it would be like to have had a child or to be pregnant or to raise a human being. I think that would have been such a great honor. But now that I know that wasn't possible for me, I allow myself to to question why that is an expected thing of us and why we put so much emphasis on having a child as being the key to loving your life and living a future that's full of the dreams that you have for yourself.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up actually, because I really had a hard time teasing out what did I really want from what I had just always assumed I'd have and from what we hear we should have and what society expects of us. And it really, because I had all this other noise going on, it was really hard when it came down to, okay, are we going to stop? Are we like making that decision and making the decision to, you know, to try adoption or fostering or, you know, whatever other options that we were faced with, a donor egg option with IVF. And so all of those were in front of us. And I found it really hard to really figure out, do I really want a child, or is it because everyone's telling me I should? Do I, in the end, what I think I realized is that on looking back, I really think that I wanted to be pregnant. And I felt like that is the next, that's like the initiation into womanhood. It's not your, you know, your period is your first initiation. And then this is the second one. So I wanted to be pregnant and I wanted to feel, I had three miscarriages. So I wanted to feel what does it feel like to have, to carry to term and have a baby at the end of that, but realize that I probably would be okay eventually without having kids. But it was so hard to tease that out from all the other stuff.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's, I mean, I admire you so much for making that decision for yourself, where I don't want to say I didn't have the decision in it, but the clinical data and my healthcare providers basically told me, we don't advise you to move forward. So, you know, I had to come to terms with analyzing what the data showed and what the medical professional said and saying, okay, this isn't what I want to do. So it took me a few years after not, you know, after making that decision and not pursuing IVF anymore, that I sat with that feeling that it wasn't my choice. And so I admire so much women that cognitively say, you know, this is the end of our road. Because I, at the time, I felt like I was being told, you know, you should end your treatments, which wasn't a problem. I mean, I appreciate it that my doctor wasn't continuing to have me do round after round, because I think there's so many women that go through that where they feel like they're, I don't want to say strung along, but that they're continue to offer hope to, you know, try your seventh or eighth or ninth round of IVF, where I was grateful that after two at my second clinic, the doctor basically told me that the data was not in my favor. So although it was my decision to stop the treatment, I was, I feel like I didn't necessarily have a choice in it. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I wouldn't say that I cognitively made that choice at the time. We were faced, I think, with a pretty similar situation. I was 44 at the time. So similar stats as you would have seen, depending on our, I mean, obviously our hormones and bodies are different, but I didn't have the option to even do IVF. We went through, I think, four IUI cycles that didn't work. And I never even, like, I was just kind of going along thinking this is going to work, until finally the doctor was like, I think you need to really consider doing IVF now. And I kind of went, oh, okay. I don't know what was going on in my head. I mean, I see the stats in front of me, but just thought that my body was different and it's healthy and this isn't going to be a problem. And it was when we got to the IVF clinic, which were different for us, that he said, you're like, I wouldn't even do IVF. I don't recommend you doing IVF at all with your own eggs. If you want to continue, you need to use a donor egg. And that in Canada, I mean, yes, we did have a choice, but that the cost for that is exorbitant. It's a whole nother process. And at the time, I mean, we deliberated, my husband was doing some things to try to improve sperm quality, all of that sort of stuff. And it was not a moment in time where we made that decision. It was a back and forth process. And I went back to it several times. You know, I kind of, we said, okay, we're not going to go through with this with a donor egg. Let's try adoption. At least that was my opinion that we should try adoption. And then even after we decided not to do that, I thought, well, maybe I could still get pregnant naturally. Like maybe this will just happen. And there was still always that hope. And then my sister-in-law had a baby and my husband said, maybe, you know, should we try? Like, maybe we should do that. Like, maybe we should try. It was a long process of back and forth. And in the end, it got too late. And so I did in the beginning identify with that woman who doesn't have a choice. It was later that I kind of could look back on it and say, well, what did I really want? What do I really want? And that came from work, you know, all the stuff that you teach, that you do with your clients. So enough about me. Let's talk more about you.
Okay.
You said something in the notes to me that I really wanted to dive into. And it was that idea of you were talking about how you felt as though you robbed your husband of the opportunity to have children. And I want to dive into that a little bit because I think it's really common. I think that's a common feeling. And I want to hear how you would coach someone through that. So talk a little bit about that feeling that you had and how you managed to turn that around.
Okay. Well, it's I would say something that's very common that I saw in myself, and it's amazing how so many of my clients have brought that same thought that or belief that they had that they robbed their partner from being a parent. And I would say that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves that it's up to us to fulfill others. And that was something that I just felt like it was my responsibility. If my husband was going to marry me and I was going to be his wife, it was on me to figure out how to create our family. Yet he never once said anything to me or indicated, even in like my darkest days where I probably was such a terrible person to live with because I was under so much stress and duress trying to, you know, go through IVF. He never once made any indication that he was disappointed in me, that he wishes he would have married someone else. But those were all things that came up in my mind for me. Yeah. And so it's just another layer of pressure that I think we put on ourselves as women with infertility, that it's up to us to present a beautiful life to somebody. But the truth is he has options. I mean, the way that I see it is I cannot create a beautiful life for him. He has to love his life. And for me to put that pressure on myself, and I work on this a lot with my clients, is expectations that we put on ourselves that aren't even being expected of us. So really working on our beliefs that we have and what we're carrying and the expectations we have of ourselves that aren't serving us. And we hang on to that, I think, a lot as humans. Of, well, you know, I got to show up for this person. I got to do this for this person. This person won't be happy unless I give them a child, or they won't love me or stay with me or want to be married to me if I can't give them that. And I just did a lot of work to believe that that wasn't why we were together as partners. If it would have been a cherry on top to be parents.
Yeah.
But the work that I've done to just realize that our marriage and the bond that we have together spans much greater than just having a child together.
Mm-hmm. It has to be, doesn't it? I mean, oh my gosh. And to go through infertility as a couple, if your bond is not strong, there's so many couples that I know that don't make it because they don't have that foundation. Or they have the belief that this is what was going to create their family. And when you don't get that outcome, then it all falls apart, right?
Yes. And trust me, there's days even now where I look across the table at him and it's the two of us, and it sometimes feels lonely, and that's okay. And I think a lot of people just expect that when you get to the side of healing, that you don't have these feelings anymore of sadness or loneliness or question. And what I try to teach my clients is that you're always going to have that piece of you that wonders what it would be like, or wishes that they could, you know, give their husband a child or their partner a child, but you recognize it. And then you just say, I'm human. Of course I feel that way. And so when I look at my husband sometimes, and it's just the two of us, I wonder, is this going to be enough? Are we going to,
yes,
you know, make it into our 80s and 90s? And then I tell myself, of course it is. You know, look at this, look what we've been through, look how much we want to accomplish together, and what we are striving for as a couple, and just bringing yourself back to like what is true really inside of my heart, and realizing that you can always recognize and appreciate the sadness that you have, but it doesn't have to be what drives you forward.
Yes. I love the way you described that. I feel like I talk about grief a lot, particularly because when I first started coaching, I was coaching women who had miscarriages. So there was a tangible loss there, tangible, not so tangible, but maybe more tangible than infertility. Maybe it doesn't really matter. My point is that when you lose that identity of being a mother, that dream or the expectation of being a mother, that is a loss. And you will always, you know, even after you've healed, I agree with you. You've healed. I feel like I've healed. I mean, it's always a work. I am a work in progress. We all are, but I'm at a point where I feel, I think like you do, where we've embraced our childless life. We feel more on the child-free end of the spectrum now that we've done so much work. But there's always, it's like when you lose a person, when you lose a parent or someone in your life that you loved, you will always, with that person, go back and you will always think, well, what would life be like if that person was still here? And so you're going to do that when you lose a dream as well. You're going to look at your life and say, what would it be like if we had a child, if we had two children, if we had however big you imagined your family to be? So I think it's the same thing. It's grief, and it will resurface here and there. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's okay.
And, you know, to that point, I think a lot of people fear seeking the healing process because it's scary to let go of our grief because it's felt so real for so long. And I know I felt that way. I historically, you know, the Lana 1.0 version of me, I did not believe in thought work. I was not someone who believed that your mindset could actually change. I just thought things happen and you just put on your strong face and you just, you know, tether in and you just go to work on overcoming whatever obstacles in front of you. And I think a lot of that was because I just had a fear of not being good at being happy or loving my life if I couldn't be a mom. Mm-hmm. And so many of us, you know, being me the first in line, I think avoid trying to heal from a trauma like infertility, because we just think we're never going to be good at it and we just won't figure it out. So why add to my list of things that I haven't been successful at? And I was telling my husband actually last night that one of the reasons I am so excited to have a community and be in a community with people like you who are willing to tell their stories is because once you learn the skill or the gift, I should say, of evaluating what's gone on for you, it's so easy to feel happy and to feel light again and show up truly as you, because you're not constantly trying to put this veil on of who you are and how hard you try to be a mom. And it's just, I was telling him last night, I just feel so light and I'm no special snowflake. You know, I say that all the time, like anyone can do it, but it's just believing that you can learn to love your life and embrace a life that you thought was so, that was opposite than what you thought your life would ever end up like.
It's so true. And, you know, I was just, as you were talking, I was thinking about a day I had recently where I was really down in the dumps and couldn't seem to pull myself out of it. And I knew, I mean, I have all the tools to do that. I know how to get myself out of that state, but I consciously like didn't want to. And I think there's a bit of that too. And I was trying to, I haven't really gotten into why, but for that day, I just felt like I just want to wallow here for a bit. And then I knew, because I've done so much work, that okay, tomorrow is going to be better and I'll probably just feel better and I'll do all, you know, use all my tools and get on with it. Most of the time, I don't even think about it. Like it's, I just feel lighter, as you said, but there's days when, and I think when those days are plentiful, like when you're in the depths of infertility or trying to accept that you won't have children, I think some women are just like me, like they don't actually want to move, or at least not yet. They just, and that's okay too, to just sort of allow yourself that, you know, you're allowed to feel sorry for yourself for a little bit, right?
Absolutely. And I say this all the time, that I wouldn't trade my years of grief because I needed that. I mean, I'm sure that there's people out there that maybe are able to heal from things quicker, but I really, I wasn't ready to let go of the sadness and the feelings that I was feeling of, you know, rejection of myself and failure of my body and my questioning of what my life was going to be like if I wasn't going to be a mom. Like I am grateful that I had those years, as sad as they were, because if you don't know the contrast, you never get to the other side of it. And even today, you know, there's, like I said, you have days that you just feel like junk and you feel sad, and there's nothing wrong with that because it's part of, you know, what we've learned in the life coach school where I have my certification is the 50-50 rule, that we almost are, masking so much because we are expecting ourselves to be happy and joyful and feel this freedom every day. And it's just not humanly possible. So the best part of the 50 is the other 50. So if you can 50% of the time feel like wallowing in your sorrow, then other 50% when you're not, just feel so much more freeing and joyous.
Yeah.
So I am I'm someone that just, I don't expect people to be happy all the time because that's not realistic either. So the 50-50 rule is something that, I really try to have grace with myself on the days that I'm not feeling the happiness and joyousness that I do on other days.
You're so right. We're the human experience I believe is meant to, we're meant to feel all the different emotions. That's why they are available to us, right? And if you don't, if you're masking all the negative ones, then you're also masking the positive ones, that that's impacting your positive experiences too. So better to allow yourself to feel all the stuff on the one side of the 50 and so that you can really truly feel the good stuff too.
Yes. And that takes, it's an art, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, questioning like, oh, at this point, shouldn't I be over this by now? Or, you know, should getting a baby shower invitation impact me the way it does? You know, we have all these, you know, what's wrong with me that I would even still be upset when I walk through Target and I see, you know, the baby stroller section, you know, all those things that they still, there's that little ting in me that, you know, when I see that stuff, I'm like, oh, you know, like I never got to register for my baby shower.
Yeah.
I never was able to do all that and just be like, yeah, it makes sense that I would still be sad about that. There's nothing wrong with me for feeling sad that I didn't get to have a gender reveal party.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the appreciating that you're human and of course you're going to think those things, that there's nothing wrong with you.
Yes.
For feeling that.
Yeah. 100%. I'm with you. Now I do want to talk about the BFA cycle.
Yes.
BFA cycle.
Okay. Yes.
Let's talk about that. I want to hear more about this.
Yeah. So the type of coaching that I'm trained to do is called causal coaching. So understanding the cause of why you're feeling or thinking, believing, you know, in the way that you do. And so the BFA cycle is something that I work on to better understand what it is that you're believing about yourself, your story, what you've encountered in your life, and understanding how that belief is causing you to feel a certain way. So if you wake up every day and you're feeling disappointed, you're feeling lacking, you're feeling let down, like what it is that is causing you to believe that, that is, you know, that feeling comes up for you. And then depending on the feelings that we have each day, whether they're, you know, joyous, excited, depressed, whatever it is going to cause you to take certain actions, maybe not getting out of bed, not interacting with friends, not saying yes to an invitation to something. So those feelings that we have are creating the actions that we do or don't take in our life. So the BFA cycle is something that allows us to transform how we want to believe about ourselves or how we want to feel each day, or maybe the actions that we want to take, but we can't do that until we actually go through and start to identify what's coming up for us. So when I work with a client, it's really getting granular on, you know, okay, if you're feeling this way, what thoughts are you thinking that are causing that feeling for you? And when you're feeling in this way, how are you reacting to that feeling? Are you motivated to do things? Are you not motivated to do things? Are you cutting people out of your life? You know, what actions are you taking? So the BFA cycle is something that once clients work with me, I really want to give them the opportunity to do this work on their own. I never want clients to feel like without me that they can't solve whatever it is that's coming up for them. So the BFA cycle is a tool that I teach my clients so that way they can continue to implement skills in their lives that will get them to the, you know, results they want to see. So the teachings that I learned come from, you know, I mentioned I'm certified through the Life Coach School. So there's something called the model that Brooke Castillo, who founded the Life Coach School, has created, and it's changed my life because I never thought I could question a belief that I had about me. I just assumed that any woman I ever knew who didn't have kids was probably a really sad, lonely, going to die alone in a nursing home type of person. Mm-hmm. And no one ever told me that I could believe differently. about that story.
Yeah.
So that's where the BFA cycle comes in.
Okay. So could we maybe do, like, could you walk me through an example of how it works? So, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say how it works is basically, you know, if we were in a coaching session, I would like you to tell me, like, what's something that is commonly coming up for you? What's something that is bringing you grief, bringing you animosity, something that you want to change? Is it a thought? Is it a feeling? Is it a belief that you have about you?
So me personally?
Well, we can do an example of that. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about something that came up recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if it comes up for a lot of people. So, holidays, me and my husband are the ones who are expected to accommodate.
Okay.
So we, you know, we're always the ones who do the traveling to get to everybody else. Cause my sisters have children. My parents are aging. So we're the ones who are always doing the accommodating because it's easy, it's perceived. This is my belief, right? Like, it's perceived. Mm-hmm. My family perceives that it's easier for us to travel. So we're the ones who are expected to travel.
Okay. So why is it a problem that they believe that it's easier for you to travel?
Because it's not. It's a problem because we don't want to travel. We don't always want to be the ones who travel. And sometimes I would like to host instead. Mm-hmm. And because it makes me feel less important than everybody okay. else. So everyone else's needs are more important than mine.
Okay. So when you're thinking that everyone else's needs are more important than yours, how's that making you feel?
Like I'm not good enough. It makes me feel like I have less value. Like I'm not worthy. Makes me feel smaller than they are.
So when you're feeling smaller than they are, because you're thinking that everyone expects you to travel during the holidays, what are some of the things you do when you're feeling small?
Well, I typically shut down. I'll like kind of shut out my family and just kind of be annoyed in the background. They don't really know how I feel. I'm just sort of annoyed in the background, and then we get together and I ignore it. But I'll kind of shut down and just internalize all my irritation with the whole scenario.
What are some things that you don't do when you're feeling small?
What are some things that I don't do? Do you mean like the opposite? So,
well, I don't know. Cause you're thinking everyone expects you to travel. Like your needs just aren't, you know, considered. You're feeling small.
So I don't stand up for what I need. I don't voice my needs. I don't make the suggestion to, well, you know, maybe it's our turn to host. Maybe you guys could do the traveling this time. I don't voice that. I just sort of internalize mm-hmm. it all instead.
Yeah. So then you're not showing up for yourself, right? Because you're having this belief that everyone expects you to be the one to travel. Mm-hmm. But when you don't question, so, you know, there's a belief everyone expects of it, but, you know, do they? Is it true? Like,
yeah.
Just understanding what that belief is and not necessarily trying to change it right away, but just deciding like, what are my other options here? Could I say, hey, we're going to sit this one out mm-hmm. or who's willing to come by me? It would mean a lot to me. I'd love to host you in our home. but we carry this belief that, you know, just, you know, I'm feeling small because everyone just expects this of me. We don't ever really take time to analyze that and say, is that even true?
Yeah, that's a really great way. We were just talking about this on my last interview, that just asking that question, is that really true? And what is really true? What do I know is true? And yeah, I think in that scenario, that's a good question to ask. Is it true that they're expecting that? Or are they just, you know, suggesting and meeting their own needs without really thinking about mine? And if they knew what mine were, you know, maybe they're making the assumption that I'm okay with it. Yeah. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense to just get to the root of what's the belief behind that.
Mm-hmm. And what's causing it. And is it a problem if you sit out Thanksgiving this year because it wasn't aligned with what was right for you and your husband?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is more important for you to show up being feeling small because you feel like you weren't taken into account, or saying, you know what, like, it's important for us to wake up in our own home this holiday and we're going to sit tight.
Yeah. I think that's a message going back to my listeners. I think that's a message that a lot of people need to hear is, what is right for you? Where are your boundaries? Where, you know, could you just sit this one out and do what's right for you? And if you are going to show up and not speak your voice, then can you show up, you know, can you show up fully, or are you going to show up? It becomes a choice, I guess, is what I'm saying. Right.
Yeah, like, it does. And people pleasing is a big part of it.
Yeah. Yes. That really boils down to self-worth. Right. When you feel like you need to get your worth from pleasing other people. This is my work now coming into play. This is all self-worth kind of stuff. But yeah, if you're making a choice to go and accommodate versus voicing that you'd like to host or deciding not to go, then, you know, maybe if you're making that choice, you didn't feel like it was a choice, but really it is, then can you show up fully?
Yeah.
I'm speaking to myself here.
And like your reasons why you are or are not showing up.
Yeah.
Are you showing up because you feel that it's expected of you, or because you truly want to see your sisters mm-hmm. and your parents?
Yes. That's a great question too.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times we get convicted in our story, whether it's a good or a bad story. And we want to put our foot down to prove a point, but who are we proving a point to?
Oh, that's such a good point. No pun intended. That's like, that's like, yeah, that kind of hit home.
Yeah. So, and it's all, you know, and the great thing is, the BFA cycle, I mean, that's just like a little snap, you know, shot into it. Cause mm-hmm. you know, we had what, three minutes here to do something like that, but
yeah,
we don't necessarily have to change the way that we're going to do anything, but I've seen so much opportunity in myself. And when I work with my clients, is just understanding how we're thinking about something
mm-hmm.
and the story that we're telling ourselves. And it doesn't mean, if it's not in popular fashion to think the way that we think, it's okay. And if we want to change the way that we think, it's okay too. You know, just, but we don't ever stop to evaluate, has that story I've been telling myself, is it even relevant anymore? Is it even as important to me as it used to be 4 years ago?
Thank you for sharing that with us. I can see how that would be. I mean, just that little, you know, you say it was only 3 minutes, but there is a, you know, I can see how the mind shift works in that scenario. So hopefully my listeners will have seen that as well and could kind of witness that. So we're kind of coming up to, I think, about 45 minutes here. Why don't we talk about where people can find you. And I know you have a free gift for my listeners. Can you tell us where to find that?
Sure. So I created a guide. It's called The Guide to Loving Your Life Again. And that is available on stitchcoaching.com or on my Instagram, which is stitchcoaching, and the link tree. But, you know, it was important for me to create the guide because one thing that's a common theme that I hear with my clients, and then I also felt, is I just wanted to love my life again. And I felt that when I found out that I had infertility, and then I went through all these years of treatments, I just would think like, I want to love my life again. I want to just figure out like how I'm going to get to that point that I wake up every day and just feel vivacious and, you know, excited for what's to come. So I provide some free journal prompts, some affirmations, some work that we can do to just start discovering what it is that we can offer ourselves in order to love our life again. So the guide is free for download. And I always tell people there's 7 days of prompts, but there's so much growth that you'll start to see in yourself. So you can just kind of recycle those once a week, just go through a different prompt and see how you are progressing as you're continuing to become more in tune with what you're believing about yourself and your story.
Beautiful. It's the small steps that get us longevity, right? The big transformations in the end. Yeah, I love it. Thank you. So Stitch Coaching, stitchcoaching.com, at Stitch Coaching on Instagram. And, and then do you want to talk about the, you have a program coming up too, that's starting.
I do. Well, it's going to be a pilot program. So as you can tell, I'm huge into understanding your beliefs and examining your beliefs. And so I am putting together a pilot program. It's called the Belief Reinvention Experience. And it's going to be a quick 4-week program where I'm going to try out some new techniques and some new strategies. So it's going to be a smaller group. I'm going to take an application process. So that's going to be going live. It'll be on stitchcoaching.com. And it will be a great way to kind of get in the ground level. If you're not ready to fully work with a life coach and hire a coach to help you, it will be a great way to start to see some amazing results that you can have in just 4 weeks of being part of the pilot.
Perfect. I'm going to link all of that up in the show notes, but I think it all boils down to the one, really go to stitchcoaching.com and you can get the free gift. You can learn about the program. It's all there, right?
Yes. And, you know, I just am so grateful for people like you, Sherry, who are willing to be brave and tell their story and create a community, because I didn't have one when I was on the tail end of, you know, my treatments and finding out that I couldn't be a mom. I just really yearned for community. And I think women like us who are brave enough to tell our stories just to help to open the doors to other women that need to hear it. So I just am so grateful to be here with you today.
Oh, thank you for joining me and for sharing your story and doing the work that you do too. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
If you found value in this episode, I invite you to follow, subscribe, like, or review so we can grow this community of women awakening their worth together as childless women. If you'd like more of this, check out my Instagram account at awakening.worth and come back next week for another episode. See you then. Mm-hmm.